You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 19th of March, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at RadioAlbion.com because we were hoping to hear from Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, who I was in contact with a few hours ago, but he seems to have disappeared. I don't think we need to get too alarmed about that. He was up very early this morning talking to me, and I suspect he may have fallen asleep, in which case, hopefully, he will call in while I'm doing the show. I really don't like doing these live shows solo. I would much rather have a co-host with me, because I run out of things to say. I run out of things to think about. And particularly today, that might happen, because we were going to talk about the economy, which is not something... it's not one of my strong points. I understand basically how it works, but I don't understand the finer side of it that Matt does. And that's one of the things that we like to concentrate on in this show, because he does understand it. And I can ask him the sort of questions that I would hope you listeners would like to find the answers to. So forgive me if I'm not as in-depth as Matt would be, but we do have the article here that he sent me that he wanted to cover today, and it comes from Market Watch. The economic pain caused by the continuing coronavirus epidemic could be even worse than the great financial crisis. That's according to Scott Minard, Global Chief Investment Officer at Guggenheim Investments, who estimated in a Tuesday research note that the Chinese economy is contracting at a 15% annual rate, while the European economy is probably in a fairly severe recession. If the United States is not already in a recession, it will enter one shortly, Minard wrote. While shutting down restaurants, schools, and major events, a lot of people are going to be without a paycheck. People who probably don't have $500 worth of savings in the bank. And they won't be able to cover next month's rent, their car payment, and their living expenses. Given this dynamic, I see this getting much worse. So that's what's happening in America. We know this is what's happening in Britain. We've got real problems with this at the moment. We've got people saying, how am I going to pay my rent? They haven't sorted that out yet. As far as I can see, the only solution that they seem to be putting forward so far is giving people loans. What is the point in giving people loans if they can't pay back this money now? They need a grant. They need a grant. They need a bailout, the same as the banks were bailed out years ago. We didn't make anything from that. And a lot of the time, the money that was actually given to the banks just disappeared. It just went into these large debts that they had run up. Really, we needed to have money injected into the economy, into circulation, and the only way you can inject it into the economy and into circulation is to give it to people lower down the chain. And once you give it to people that are lower down the chain, they're going to spend it in the shops. They're going to buy products with it. Because they're buying these products, that's going to pay the wages for people that are in these jobs. Whereas if you bail out the banks, it doesn't really save. It doesn't help out the man on the street. It just helps out the banker. And it seems that what they're looking at doing here is the same thing. Once again, it looks like they're going to bail out the banks. And what they're going to do is say to everybody else, well, you're just going to have to take out a loan. But how is that going to help if their business crashes? And then when we come to the end of this recession, or when we come to the end of these coronavirus problems, people are just going to still be massively in debt. It's not going to be enough to keep their businesses going. I mean, what it says here, restaurants, schools and major events. I mean, what you've got is every shop, basically, apart from the grocery store. That's what they've closed down in France. That's likely what will be closed down in Britain, likely what will happen in America. You've got people that work in hotels. We were talking just the other day, myself and Matt, in one of these podcasts about how America is now a service economy. Well, service implies contact with other human beings. And that's exactly what is needing to be shut down, is the contact with other human beings. I mean, I can see this causing a complete reset of the banking system, as I was talking about yesterday. But what they're talking about here is trying to get a bailout, the same as they did before. And I know that the angle that Matt wanted to give on this was that if this coronavirus hadn't happened, then something else would have needed to happen, because the banks are in such a state, the American economy is in such a state, that it needed some kind of bailout anyway before this coronavirus thing happened. I mean, America is trillions in debt. So this coronavirus is very fortuitous for certain parts of the banking system. They really needed something like this to happen. And that's all I can really give of his opinion on it. But I know that was the angle that he wanted to cover. The risk is that for the first time since the 1930s, we are facing the possibility of a downward spiral into something akin to a global recession, he added. We have at least a 10 to 20% chance that is the path we are on if policymakers don't act quickly. Oh, I think that's definitely the path that we're on. I mean, it's not going to get any better, is it? I mean, these coronavirus problems are increasing exponentially. I think we had 30 people that died last night over here in Britain. We seem to be about a week, maybe 2 weeks behind Italy. Germany is just a week behind Italy. When it hits America, it's going to hit really hard. I'm not quite sure how the health system works over there, but if you've got people that don't want to go to the hospital because they're frightened that they're going to have to pay out a lot of money and they haven't got insurance, then they're going to be infecting a lot of people with this. So this downward spiral is definitely going to happen. Are they just going to keep printing money? They're just going to keep printing money and funneling that into it to try and keep it going? Because, of course, that's going to cause deflation, isn't it? Or inflation, that we're going to end up with an economy that looks like Zimbabwe, if that is the case. Minard argued that Washington, D.C. needs to think big to avoid this fate, writing that we desperately need programs similar to the Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP, approved by Congress in 2008, which made available $700 billion to the Treasury Department to buy assets from banks whose values were deeply depressed by the bursting of a bubble in real estate and the ensuing financial crisis. Well, I would agree with him that, yeah, we do need to think big to avoid this fate, but we should really be thinking about resetting the entire financial system. The reason why we are in this situation is because it's based upon usury. All the profit is based upon usury. That's why 98% of the gross domestic product, 98% of everything that we produce actually doesn't create any value for us. It just goes to paying off the debts from the borrowing. And that is because usury just increases and increases and increases. If you just pay back a little bit of the debt every week, then you're going to be paying that. You could be paying that for hundreds of years. And in Britain, we've only just paid off the debt we had from the First World War. All of that is because the interest that gets put on it. Interest is not something that is native to the white man. We know this. We can look back and we can look at the history books that tell us that in Europe, the Europeans, they didn't engage in usury. They didn't know anything about usury. It was a completely unheard of thing. And this is even before we were Christian. Of course, when we were Christian, we were also against usury for the first 1400 years, because the Bible itself is very against usury. But even before then, there are reports of the Germans when they were still pagans, they didn't engage in usury. And we've been doing it for the last, I guess, since the 14th century. The Pope was the one he basically redefined usury as just meaning biting interest, whereas before it meant any interest. And once it was defined to mean biting interest, they could say, well, how much is biting interest? 5%, 6%, 10%. And then you got the compound interest. And then you basically end up where we are today with the banks owning absolutely everything and them looking at debt as in profits. But for everybody else, it's debt. For everybody else, it means that everything that we produce is just being siphoned out of our countries and into these international banks. So the big changes that need to occur is we need to actually look at the whole way that the system, our economy and our financial system, and the whole way that it works. And not just usury, but also all this speculation that we have and people owning companies in foreign countries. We've got electricity companies that are owned by foreigners over here in Britain. We've got water companies that are owned by foreigners, railways, all sorts of things that are really important for the functioning of our country. And if you look at what's happening with 5G, they're going to give that to Huawei. They're going to give that to this Chinese company with connections to the Chinese government there. So you've got a threat there. But it means that other countries could just pull the plug on the electricity here, on the internet here. So that's another aspect of it that needs to change. I mean, we should stand on our own two feet. We should be self-sufficient the same way that an individual should be self-sufficient, and you want to be growing your own vegetables and having your own animals. That was always the best way to live. That was how we lived as recently as 70 years ago. Everybody grew their own food, basically, and a lot of the time they made their own clothes and had cobblers and made their own shoes. And people took pride in what it was that they were creating. And we could honestly say all of this is ours, that this is what we have built as a nation. And Britain was a shining light to the rest of the world, everything that Britain had built. And now it's all being owned by these foreign companies. It's all owned by these banks because of this wicked banking system that we've got. And instead of saying, well, we need to take a whole look at this, a holistic look at the economy, what they're saying is, well, we just need to do the same as we did back in 2008. We just need to give these banks all this money. I mean, look at what they're saying here. $2 trillion is what they are actually asking for. This time around, however, the US economy will need a much bigger fund, upwards of $2 trillion, to rescue many industries rather than just the banks, Minard wrote, as businesses ranging from airlines to resorts and retailers face the prospect of failure if containing the virus requires continued aggressive social distancing measures. Well, it is going to require social distancing measures, and all of this is the fault of our governments for not quarantining China when this happened. I it almost seems as if this must have been a plan of theirs that they wanted it to get this bad so that they could say, well, we've got all these problems now, we're going to have to bail everything out once again. Maybe that's the angle that Matt was going to push for. As I mentioned, he was saying that, you know, if this hadn't happened, they would have had to have had some other kind of catastrophe that was going to require a bailout. And this is very fortuitous that they can now say that it's this that requires this bailout. But we are going to need these social distancing measures. And the only reason for that is because they didn't quarantine China. And again, as I pointed out yesterday, because they didn't quarantine China, the least they could have done is built new hospitals, built pop-up hospitals, the same as they did in Wuhan. And I have learned today that Russia is doing that. Russia is building very, very fast, very rapidly. It's building a special coronavirus hospital with its own water systems and quarter of a mile exclusion zone around it. But even that is too late. I mean, Russia did actually quarantine China. So, I mean, that was the right thing to do. But that's what every country should have done. I can see people being absolutely furious at their governments for allowing this to happen. And to think that their reasoning for this was, well, we need to do this because we can't risk the economy. And they must have known how the economy was going to be affected if we had to shut down everything. We had to shut down hotels, restaurants, pubs, schools, and tell everybody that they have to stay at home and they can't socialize. I mean, half the world can't work from home. Half the world doesn't work on the internet. They do physical work. They do laboring jobs. And it's all very well the people that work in the city saying, oh yes, well, people can just work at home on the internet. The sort of work that you do at home on the internet is not the sort of work that keeps the country going. It's laboring work, basically. It's physical work that keeps the country going. The farmers, the builders, carpenters, manual work is what keeps the country going. And that is all going to have to come to a stop. That is all going to have to come to a stop. And people aren't really taking this as serious as they should do. You know, I've been out today and not many people wearing masks. And, you know, I think everybody should be wearing masks if they're going out. For one, they might have the virus and you don't want to be giving it to other people. And for the second reason, and obviously if other people have it, you don't want to be catching it. So people aren't taking this seriously enough. Once their relatives start dying, I think they'll take it pretty seriously then. And then they're going to be absolutely furious at the government. And if they hear that the government is going to bail out the banks once again, I think people are going to be even more angry. They're talking here about these large industries, things like airlines and things like that. But what about the smaller industries? What about the small hotels, the small pubs? You know, over here in Britain, they haven't told them that they have to close. Because if they tell them that they have to close, then they can claim on the insurance. So what they've said is, well, we just recommend that people stay 2 to 3 meters away from anybody else. And they're hoping that they can get away with that. And that is just going to destroy what's left of the pubs in Britain, what's left of the service industry in Britain. And I noticed that nobody is suggesting that they just get given a load of money. As I say, they're just saying, well, what we need to do is give them loans and we won't actually ask them to pay those loans back for quite some time. And what they are suggesting here is rescuing many industries. And of course, what that will be is just basically paying the banks so that these industries don't have to pay the banks back the loans that they have had to get out in order to set up their industries. And of course, if you had a nationalist banking system and you wanted to borrow money, you would have a project that you wanted to do, say, some big project that you wanted to build. And the project itself, of course, is going to be worth a lot of money. And it's also going to make a lot of money. So you would work out how much that would cost. You would go to the national bank. You would say, I wish to have this amount of money. I wish to borrow this amount of money in order to create this industry. And what they would do is that bank would then create that money. They would monetize that promise to pay it back. That money would then go into circulation, and whoever it was had this business idea, they would be able to buy the raw materials. They would be able to employ the people in order to create whatever it was that they were creating. Once it was created, they would then be able to sell enough of it or sell it on in order to make that money back that they had spent out on the resources. And then they would be able to pay that bank, and the bank would then zero that debt. The bank wouldn't say, well, I've got this money now. They would say, well, it's gone around in circulation and now it's come back to us. That can be zeroed. And then at the end of that, you've still got this, whatever it was that was built with all that money. So you've the country itself, the nation itself then has this valuable asset that is being created. Okay, it's owned by an individual, but if you've got lots of individuals that have done that, then the nation has these huge assets, and that's the way that it should be. So how can we look at our system and say, well, if we don't make that 1 or 2% gross domestic product every year extra, we're going to have a recession? Everything around us has been built by us. Everything around us is the value of our nation, and yet we're being told that somebody else owns it. That's what needs a radical rethink, is the entire way the economy is set up. And this is just such a situation where a radical rethink could happen. You know, and you would hope that maybe somebody like Donald Trump would actually think about this, or Boris Johnson. Maybe people will suggest that to them, because you can't just bail your way out of doing this. And the other option is, as I was saying yesterday, is just to have a jubilee, a debt jubilee, which is another system that we always used to have every 7 years. You would just zero all the debts. So you would say, right, well, let's zero all the debts and start again. And if we had always done that, again, we never would have got into this situation that we are actually in now. A similar proposal was offered Monday by the Wall Street Journal's editorial board, which argued that the Federal Reserve should create a lending facility whereby businesses could borrow to keep their operation afloat until more normal economic activity resumes. Again, this is the problem. If you've got people that can't actually earn any money, if they can't work, the last thing they need is debts. The last thing they need is somebody lending them a load of money, because they've got no facility to pay that back. The banking system would put interest on it, and it would mean that they were just digging themselves even further into the hole. What's actually needed here is grants to be given to these companies, not loans. And those grants, if we had a functioning banking system that wasn't set up just to make private individuals money, if we had a banking system that was set up to add value to the nation, we would have plenty of money that could be given out in a grant to help our people. I mean, everything around us, everything that has this value, that would be seen as the savings of the nation, rather than owned by these individual banks, owned by the individual owners of the banks. Markets may be soothed by such extreme measures, given the chilly reception they've given to the Federal Reserve's stimulus efforts, including a reduction of the Fed funds rate to between 0% and 0.25%, and relaunching a program of debt purchases aimed at reducing long-term interest rates. Over the past month, the Dow Jones Industrial Average DJIA 2.508%, the S&P 500 Index SPX 2.383%, and the NASDAQ Composite Index COMP 3.996% have declined more than 25%. Such a fund would have to be capitalized with money appropriated by Congress, and the borrowers would have to present good collateral, physical assets, accounts receivable, and the like, and have been solvent before the viral panic took hold, the journal said. So it's basically just a loan, isn't it? It's just a loan. They need to have these physical assets, but if their businesses have, you know, their businesses have crashed and they're losing everything because of the coronavirus, they're not even going to have any collateral. Politicians may be wary of taking such steps, given the unpopularity of last decade's bank bailout program, even as proponents like Minard argue that the government ultimately recouped more than the initial amount lent by the time TARP was wound down in 2014. Well, that's something I would have to talk to Matt about, whether that was accurate. Better Markets, a non-profit organisation founded after the financial crisis to advocate for public interest in financial markets, tweeted on Tuesday that any such programme should come with strict conditions. And I noticed that Andrew Yang has actually been in the White House. I don't know if he was called in there to talk about this universal basic income that he was campaigning on. And I do think that that would be a good idea in this situation. That's something that the public would want. if everybody was given a basic income, at least that would help to, at least that would help to cover the bills that people are going to have. And what I mean, that is better than handing out these large sums to banks so that the banks can say, well, we'll write off the debts from these big companies. Because, of course, you know, the banks aren't going to do that. They won't actually write off the debts from these big companies. They'll make some way of making some kind of a profit from it. But if the money was actually given out in much smaller portions to everybody in the form of a universal basic income, then they would be spending that money, obviously. So that money would be going into the local economy. You know, if people have got debts with their friends around them, or with their neighbours, with the people in their village or town that they live in, then they would be able to pay those debts, and the people that the debts have been paid to, they'd be able to pay for their food from the local shop, and the local shop would be making its money, and everybody would be able to stay afloat. It's when you just send out the money to these big banks that the smaller people, the smaller producers, they're the ones that can't stay afloat. And that's what really infuriates people, is to see that these greedy banks that we bailed out last time, to think that they're going to be able to do the same this time once again and make a profit out of this coronavirus is... Yeah, it's pretty shocking. I've got a final news story here that is to do with the coronavirus, but not particularly to do with the economy. This is in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Police Department will not be making arrests for several forms of petty theft and drug crimes, according to a new internal memorandum leaked to local media. Documents detailing the city's policies for its state of emergency revealed the questionable law enforcement move. The policy instead will require police to temporarily detain offenders suspected of the crimes and verify their identity. Their information will be provided to a police detective, and ostensibly the case will be investigated when the coronavirus panic is over. In the meantime, it largely appears that criminals will be provided with essentially free rein to commit theft, property offences, burglary, vandalism, grand theft auto, and prostitution without fear of quick arrest. And this is quite worrying. And I think this is stage 3 over here in Britain. They've got the level 1, level 2, level 3, and level 4. And I think level 3 is when the police stop getting involved in petty crime and are just concerned with keeping everybody off the streets. And I think level 4 is when the army take over. I mean, we are in a serious situation here, and I have been wondering about you know how they're going to keep people off the streets. I mean, you've got drug dealers out there, you've got junkies out there, you've got prostitutes out there, and their business is all on the streets. And how are you going to keep them off them? You might end up with a lot of these junkies actually having to go cold turkey. But what this article here is saying, you know, it's basically allowing these criminals free rein to do whatever. But I mean, what else can they do? What else can they do? It's like the doctors when they're in the hospital and they have to prioritize the patients now. Over there in Italy, if you are over 80 and you need intensive care, they can't give it to you. They have to prioritize the younger people who are going to have a better chance of actually living. And in this situation here, the police are going to have to prioritise the more important things than going after burglars, burglary and vandalism and things like that. I bet they don't stop going after people saying hurty words on the internet, though. I'm sure they're going to see that as a high priority, as we know they always do. Getting back to the article, such a policy could actually prove to be a looter's best dream, as if enough citizens take advantage of the opportunities for arrest-free property crimes, it will be all but impossible for the Philadelphia Police Department to follow up in weeks or possibly months and book them on account of crimes committed during the coronavirus epidemic. And obviously what we've learned from the past in catastrophes is if you live in a multicultural area, yes, there will be looting and there will be a lot of crime. If you live in a white area, then everybody will pull together and actually there won't be that much crime. So, you know, basically, if you live in a multicultural zone and the police get told they don't have to arrest anyone anymore, then watch out. You might be better off moving away, just moving out of the city for the time being. Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner had called for a major reduction of arrests for what he described as petty crimes on Monday, stating that such legal proceedings would accelerate the spread of the coronavirus. Officers will be granted the discretion to make traditional arrests if they determine that someone poses a threat to public safety. Homicide and violent crime rates in the city of Philadelphia are already said to have been rising independently of the ongoing crisis. And I believe Philadelphia is not that far from Dr. Johnson. Obviously, we hope he's okay. I do think he has just overslept, and I will probably hear from him later on, and we'll probably get an apology from him in his Orthodox Nationalist next week. But thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.